Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Nancy, and I am indeed an alcoholic. Can we start together with a moment of silence? Use that in whatever way you choose, and then together out loud we'll do the Serenity Prayer together. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Welcome, everybody. So I've got some cheat notes here. I am really fortunate today to be on the Roundup Committee and chair for the hospitality group. And the support that we all have had in putting on this convention and in the hospitality is phenomenal. And it teaches me yet again, I'm not in charge, I'm just a little person, I get to give whatever it is, and the gifts I get as a result is like 10 to 12 fold. So thank you everybody for your participation today, whether you just showed up or if you are of service, so thank you. Absolutely not one of us does this alone. We don't get to stay sober alone. For myself, I can only speak for me. It has never worked. And so I walk with you guys and you walk with me. To let you know my sobriety, the honor I have to lead this meeting just blows me away. This past Tuesday, on July 12th, I celebrated 43 years of sobriety. And I want you to know that when I came in at the tender age of 21 years old, I was not real thrilled with playing cribbage with a bunch of old men about 50 to 60 years old. I never dreamed I'd be up here doing this. So if you're new in program, welcome. You just absolutely have no idea what you're in for. No idea. So one of the things I've been asked to do here at this meeting is it's going to be a pull the name out of the hat meeting. We're going to have approximately 4 to 5 speakers. The meeting goes, you know, as scheduled, and as we get close to the end of the meeting, you know, we'll have to make sure that we close it on time out of respect. The other piece is that for the speakers that wind up, we're going to pull a name out of the hat. Please do not touch. There's a microphone up here on the white napkin. Please don't touch that because it's recording, so that you'll know this meeting is being recorded, and so it will be available after the meeting. So that's kind of the housekeeping business things. So to continue the opening, I want to say that I am responsible when anyone anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there, and for that I am responsible. We have collected the names of people with 30 years or more. And what we're going to do is I'm going to pull a name out of the hat right now. And would that person please be willing to come up, if you choose to share, come up and sit up on stage, and you'll be the second speaker after Rosalyn. We'll kind of do that as we go so that we got one right after the other. So Rosalie is going to be our first speaker, and after that, we're going to have back row Bill. So make your way up here. There you go. Love it. And it is with honor. If we would speak approximately 15 minutes, that would be great. And we're going to kick it off with Rosalie. Woo-hoo!
Oh, boy. Well, there are people here who know that Rosalie won't have any trouble filling 15 minutes. But to get started, my name is Rosalie. I am a member of the Brown Bag Group in Rockland, Maine. Please come up and visit us sometime, 1215 Congregational Church, Monday through Saturday. That being said, I am a most grateful alcoholic. My sobriety. Thank you, and hi to all of you. I had words of wisdom from my friend Bill, but I'm not going to tell you what it was because, oh, what the heck. He said, some people say that when you speak before a crowd of people that you don't know, to just get kind of equal with them, just pretend that they're all naked. That's more than I can handle if I have to stand up here and speak. So let's talk about alcoholism. I'm more comfortable with that. My sobriety date is February 7, 1972. I was 33 years old, the mother of five children. This is a quick encapsulation of the horror show of my life. At that time, I had been married and divorced twice. I had five children. My mother in the state of Maine were in active procedures to take those five children for my care and have me committed to Amheim. And I stood in my almost repossessed house. Oh, the bank had come to get the car as well. And I was standing in my almost repossessed house, hanging out to my dining room table. And I just looked out the picture window and said, dear God in heaven, what is wrong with me? Because I wasn't worried about my drinking. I drank, but I rarely got drunk because I didn't like being drunk. I didn't like the whirly swirly and all of that, so I could stop. And then sometime along the way, I didn't stop. I just sipped instead of drank. So I was never without a drink, but I was rarely drunk still. That came to a halt. On the last horrifying weekend, checking out Mr. Next Right Wrong, I lived in Thomaston, Maine, and I was in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, where he worked. And I worked for the same company in Warren, Maine. So I beat feet down there and started the weekend. Well, he had asked me, why don't you hold off on having a drink until I get home around 4? I said, sure, no problem. This had never come up before as an issue. So 4:15, I figured that's close enough. Had a drink. The next thing I knew, I had second and third degree burns on both arms. I had a black eye, and I ended up in the emergency room because the bartender thought I needed medical attention. We went from there to the bar. So I went to the hospital and got the medical attention, and the arrogant young pop, probably 2 years older than me, said, so how did you do this to yourself, Rosalie? And I said, I don't know. And I guess he could smell booze, and he said, have you been drinking? Do you have a problem with alcohol? And I said, well, I don't know about yesterday or tomorrow, but I sure as hell got one today. And he didn't laugh. So he treated me, my second and third degree burns, and we went back to the bar to celebrate. And the next day, I woke up in the morning and went out to the kitchen. And the whole kitchen was topsy-turvy. Stuff swooped off the counter, smashed on the floor, chairs upside down. I'm looking around and saying, well, what did you guys do after I went to bed? Oh, we didn't do anything. You did this before you went to bed. This is totally out of character for me who wrote poems and stuff. It was not of a violent nature. And I didn't even read violent books. And so I was going back to Maine on the Greyhound bus because the bank had the car. And Mr. Wright was going to rescue me from all that, I thought. So we went in the Greyhound, the terminal. There was a bar beside it. And we went and had a drink. And on the way out to the bus, I face-planted on the sidewalk in the broad daylight, about 4:30 in the afternoon. And I was well aware that there was something wrong. The burns didn't do it. The destroying of the house, threatening. I heard a woman speak from this very speaker years ago. And she talked about Mr. Bobbitt. And some of you might remember about what happened to Mr. Bobbitt. And I evidently threatened that same action that weekend. Didn't go over big. But I think he must have been an alcoholic because he called and wanted to know if I would come to Connecticut to see him. So what was wrong with him taking a chance like that with the future Mrs. Bobbitt? So there you go. Back to the story at hand. Got on the bus, back to Maine, stopped in the local restaurant right on the end of my street, drank till they took me home, and the next day I come to Jesus with a God of mine I did not understand and was trying to outrun. And I asked that question, and the God of my misunderstanding said, call Alcoholics Anonymous, of which there was hardly any information in Maine at that time, especially in Thomaston, Maine. And so I knew one person who had been sent there for his job, and he would come to my house on his lunch break with a beer and ask me to play the old Rugged Cross on my piano horn, so I think he was looking for help. But I couldn't offer it because I was still drinking. Anyway, God, in his wisdom, had me dial the operator who gave me the hospital, who gave me a minister, who gave me a member of this program, and I kept dialing all those numbers, so the miracle was already working. And got the member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, blah, 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 blah. What I heard was, can you go to 5:30 and not have a drink, and we'll pick you up and take you to a meeting. And I thought, what the hell makes him think I can't go 3.5 hours without a drink? Well, I didn't have any liquor. It was Sunday in Maine, and there was no Sunday sales, and I had no car, no way to get to any. But up on the shelf was in my collection of bottles and jars and things, cute and pretty, was General Custer. And he was still full of wine. He hadn't been opened yet. And Custer and I had a last stand that day. I won. They came and picked me up at 5:30. And we went to Woolwich to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And the lady, they led me in. By then, I had asked, how do you know if you're an alcoholic? And by the time we got to Woolwich to that meeting, I was beginning to know how you know, because I couldn't stand up unaided, because I'd been well out of drink too long. And my body was starting to do this. And I had to be let in, and I saw this woman's face way at the end of the room, and she was needle pointing away. And she looked up with a smile, like I'm seeing smiles on her faces, and she's like, where the heck have you been? I haven't seen you for so long. Never saw her before in my life. That was Maggie Gaith, God bless Cheryl and I. She saved my life. That's all I took home from that meeting. I didn't hear one word. They picked me up and took me to another meeting the next night. Damascot in Newcastle. They did the chip club. I didn't hear a word. I didn't know what a chip meant. The guy was sitting down there at the end of the table. I'm sitting up here with my second and third degree burns all bound up, looking like a Vietnam vet. And he said, anybody want a white chip? And I'm sitting there thinking it over. Do I want a white chip? Sailed it right down the table and said, why don't you take one? You might make it. I'm half Finn. Any Finns here? You don't say Mike to Finns. Watch this. That was on February 7th, 1972. By the grace of God and people like you who come listen to people like me. And a lot of reading, a lot of crying, a lot of doing a whole lot of stuff I had never in God's world imagined I would do. Speak to my heart. Speak my heart and my gut to somebody else. No, I was a locked bureau drawer. And I didn't even know my own reality. And you guys helped me find that. And I'm so privileged to be here today at the Roundup. I'm 84 years old. Those 5 kids are still in my life. We don't have a family tree, we have a family orchard. It's awful. The 11 have had 13, and those 13 have had 15, and they're on and on. I said, whatever happened to sex ed? You know? When I was a kid, we weren't told anything. If you do this and this happens, don't bring it home to me, was what I was told. And, you know, they got more info than that, and still keep coming. But I love them all, and I love you all. And for the newcomers, the people who are still here and have a little bit of struggle going on, or a lot of struggle, there is no single thing in my life that a drink could make better. And there's been some stuff. Probably the very worst stuff was a car accident in December when I was 7 years sober and my face planted on the dashboard of the car, my arm went under the dash. I had 7.5 hours of facial reconstruction, and a couple of doctors who had paid attention in medical school did a miracle right there. And so many others, big and small, and they all happened because I was sober and willing to do the next indicated, didn't feel right thing. If you wait for it to feel right before you do it, talk to your sponsor real quick. Feeling right comes after. Sponsor I had out in California, Juno and Hi, I love you. She said, you know, Rosalie, God's got three answers, yes, no, and wait. For you, he's got another one. Rosalie, you have got to be kidding. So if you get the you got to be kidding, that means it's not time yet. It might be a good idea, but not yet. I so appreciate all of you being here and making the roundup what it is, and please, all of you that can be here tomorrow morning, because you can't imagine the power in this room on Sunday morning meeting at the Roundup in Sugarloaf, Maine. Thank you.
All right, so a second before Bill comes up, we're looking for Jerry T. Are you? Awesome. Jerry's going to be the speaker after Bill.
Hey, how you all doing? I was told, make sure that you look at people and see them on the toilet. So you're all sitting down. So. Let's see how it was. Everything in my life was gray. There was no color. Everything was gray. Every time I looked at something of color, it was gray. I sitting at a table with a bottle of 100 proof Olaf vodka and a bottle of Maalox. And I was taking a drink of a Maalox to keep the vodka down. And I was trying to get my license back. I had been caught for my second OUI. And I my counselor told me, go to an AA meeting. And I said, no, I got enough, you know, car insurance. I don't need any more of that. No. She said, go to an AA meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought, all right. So I'll go to one. So I went to a Friday night meeting. I picked up a white chip. I heard some people. I didn't know what they were talking about. Saturday, I decided to stay sober, and I stayed sober all day. Sunday, 100 proof Olaf vodka, sitting at the table again, and I got drunk as a skunk. I called a person that was in that meeting, and I said, I think I need some help. He showed up in an SUV with three other guys. That was May 4th, 1991. They took me to Blue Hill Hospital to a detox, 3-day detox. And that was, maybe some of you knew Bill H. from the Elsevier, and he had that detox going in Blue Hill. I got in there, I went in the bathroom, tried to have a cigarette. The nurse came in and said, no, no, you can't do that. No smoking in here. They wanted to give me Valium. I said I didn't come in here to be on drugs. I came in here to get off alcohol. A guy showed up the next day, old as an old shoe, and he was quite a poor driver too. Drove me to Ellsworth from Blue Hill, and I went to my first AA meeting and raised my hand and said, I'm Bill, I'm an alcoholic. What happened after that was I just almost had a year and I came here. I've been coming here every live one since. What happened to me that day, it was a Sunday. It was a Sunday, and they were doing the countdown. And when I went to stand up, because they had just sitting down, you stood up that time, something came through me. From the top of my head to the bottoms of my feet. It was a feeling like I'd never felt before. And I grew up in the 70s. I had quite a few feelings. It was like a spiritual, I think it was my spiritual experience. And from there, I met my wife here that same year. She thought I was a geek. She wouldn't dance with me. And we got together finally, and we've been coming here ever since. Dave talked about miracles last night, and you know, you talked about one too. 2009, March of 2009, I had a perforated colon. That was on a Thursday. I started having pain. I went to the doctor, the emergency room on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. That's how stubborn I am. I was septic. A young lady in Bangor, Maine, put a colostomy on me and fixed me up. Spent 36 days in the hospital and a whole year. I went back in June to have a reversal. It went bad. I ended up with pneumonia. I ended up with infection. The guy took one staple out and stuff oozed out. He said, this isn't what we had planned, Mr. Allen. And I said, what's he mean by that? I eventually went back to my original doctor. First they sent me home with an infection. I ended up going back the next week with a fistula and feces coming out my wounds. I went back in, had the colostomy back. In December of that year, I went back to my old original surgeon, and she fixed me up with a reversal, and I haven't had a problem since. And during that time, that third time I was cut from here to here, I was laying in a hospital bed, and my wife is giving up hope. And she called a person from AA. That person from AA got a bunch of people together. They came in my hospital room. They prayed over me. They prayed with me. Next day I got better. It's a miracle. So I have pretty much since then gotten married in this, you know, got everything back that I ever lost. I never want to revisit that table again. And with the help of you folks in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have to do that. Thank you.
All right, thank you. We are on a roll. Is Scott B. available to speak? Okay, so now we're going to hear from Jerry T. You're up, sir.
15 minutes or so, and we're golden. Alcoholic Drug Act, my name is Jerry. My sobriety date is September 15, 1978. My first meeting in Alcoholics Anonymous since I quit drinking was August 2nd, 1976. But 2.5, 2 years and 2 months later, I quit drugs. After all, that's all this was about alcohol, you know. I had 3 wise sponsors, and eventually I had 4. That's what I needed. Couldn't get rid of them. They were all deranged. I could not get them off my butt. And every time I turned around, they were at these meetings. And I'd say, I'll go to further meetings out of town. They were there. Vic with his corn cob pipe in his mouth. And his, now he came in 1945. Now, that was a year after I was born. And I'm going, yeah, I can tell him a few things, yeah. He hasn't drank that many years. He's got to know a few other things that changed. And then his two sponsors was Joe and Fred, and they came from Akron, Ohio, and they actually established AA in the Pacific Northwest, in the Portland, Oregon area. I came in to the fellowship in the Loyola group in Portland, Oregon. It was I called it a retreat for a while. It was a recovery organization run by the Catholic Charities, but it was for people of all faiths of the cloth. But I didn't know that. About 125 people in there. In those days, you could take and cut the air with a knife. And I thought, oh, these guys, they look like they're winos and alcoholics. I didn't know that. They were in their street clothes and everything, you know. So then I came to. And things started happening. Even though I was doing wines, kind of, sort of, still dealing. I was my best customer, and and my sponsor, Vic, told me that you will intuitively know would be the right thing to do one of these days, and I thought, they don't know anything about these drugs. These are alcoholics, you know, they don't know anything. They did. They knew so much. I read the big book by myself the first time, the second edition, that my sponsor gave to me. And then I read the big book with a sponsor. In my case, I had 2 grand sponsors and I had a sponsor. And then I had a lady by the name of June. She was a little gal, about 4'11", just as broad. If you visualize somebody loading the old cannonballs, that was what she would be like. She'd be loading them in the muzzle. She wouldn't leave me alone. I thought, God, what's wrong with these people? Won't they have a life? Get a life! I finally became a person of honesty. I don't know when it happened. I don't know if I prayed about it, or I wished it, or if there's an alcoholic fairy running around, or whatever. I came to. And I think it might have had something to do with a prayer that I asked. And I found out the only prayer that's not answered is the one that's not asked. A spiritual fellowship. This is not a religion. Some people believe in the eagle that flies and soars high and wide. My friend Sean from the Bangor area, we lost him about 20 years ago from Lou Gehrig's. He came out to Dexter And we went over to Loretta's and had something to eat. And he says, I haven't got very long to live. But he kept his faith in the fellowship. He kept his honesty to himself. And I've seen this, Stu gave this to me not too long ago, but I hadn't used it in years. It has to do with trust. It has to do with faith. You know, I get a lot of little cliches and stuff. And I use that in my life. I have an ongoing construction site. And sometimes it's semi-organized mayhem, but I seem to get the dots connected so I see the picture that I need for today. You know, I didn't get here by messing around. You're going to have people that's going to say things. It's none of your business what people think of you. Don't rent space. A very good friend of mine sitting in this row here in the front, it's nobody's business what you do, but they get in there. Don't rent space to them. In my sobriety, I still have a tendency of doing it because I've always wanted to be accepted. From way back when I was 2.5, 3 years old, when I seen my alcoholic father beat the hell out of my mother. I've never hit a woman ever in my life. I have been in very few arguments and pushing, but I don't mean it. As soon as it's over with, it's over with. I'm human today. I do not walk on water. I can't even walk on ice, not alone. And you, if you think you can, get used to it, because sometimes you're lower than where whale doo-doo, you know? You got to get used to learning to live this way. Accept it, okay? A very small amount of conversations is wrapped around the word trust. In the principles, I got it down like 17th down the row. I remember the old times, I still hear them in my head. And one of my main sponsors today is Vinny G over there. He's got 49 years today.
Oh, wow.
Thank you, Vinny. Got Charlie here. He'll be picking up 59 years, October 20th at the Twilight Meeting in Turner. It's one day at a time, both of them will tell you that. 1 minute at a time. A lot of you people remember my wife used to come to the meetings with me. Never, ever did I walk 2 inches without holding on to her hand. She was my blessing from God. I asked God one time, please give me somebody, please honor me with having somebody in my life that will love me. I had a few regulations. He threw those in there. The only thing was missing, and I could actually see him, was the wings. And there she was, my Mary, and I lost her February 9th. She was a gift, but see, God needed another angel back. He said, your mission's done. In my heart and my soul, God's given me another thing that Stu gave to me, son of a gun, is God gives me 4 gifts each day, and I can't hardly wait to open them up. They're my eyes and my ears. And usually in my routine, I usually start a process at 4:30. I was so excited about this meeting up here. I got up at 3:30, and I ticked the people off in the apartment building because I was doing my wash. And they didn't like that. One woman in front said, why don't you go to Washers Anonymous? So I'll go to Chocolates Anonymous first. I sponsor people. And in my sponsorships, I'm 100% successful. I've had people go out. I've had people die. I'm here because I work with alcoholics. That's the 100%. And I try to improve my life 1% a day. At the end of a year, that's 365%. And don't forget, the Ark was built by non-professionals. The Titanic was built by professionals. Really? You know, I can mess up a one-person parade today. How we doing?
Five.
Thank you. I can mess up a one-person parade, and I'm the only one in it. And I will mess it up from one stop sign to the next. I'm robbing people of things that have been told to me. I get cliches. My sponsor went overboard to show me things. He asked me to go fishing one day up at, by Mount Hood in Oregon. And I was excited. Great big beet cock, 6'7". It's a corn cob pipe. Want to go fishing? I said, yeah, I love to fish. And I told people, Vic doesn't fish. I'm going, what? Well, how come he asked me to go fishing? I'm thinking, well, is this like a Godfather thing or what? I know he's got ticked off at me. Excuse me. I walk on water sometimes. The point what he did is it bothered me for about 3 more days after that. And we loaded up this little boat that he borrowed from somebody. We went up by Estacada. We walked in a half, maybe quarter of a mile, stumbling over stumps, brush, rocks, sand. We got that thing into the water. He says, now paddle. I said, okay. He says, oh, this is good enough. Throw the anchor over. Over. And I'm thinking, what is he going to do with me? If he was going to kill me, he would have tied me to the anchor or something, you know. I was a pain. I really was. And I knew it by that time. But he had a point. And this is the point, and I'll close with that. He says, look up in the sky. What do you see? I see clouds, sun, blue sky. Now look down in the water. And I look down. He says, what do you see? Well, I see the clouds. I see the sky. I see the sun. Can't see anything else, can you? No. He says, below there is rocks and stumps and brush and sand. Just because you can't see them doesn't mean it's not there. You're as honest and as sober as your deepest part of your secrets. Please take that with you. And if you've got something you don't want to share with somebody, share it with your higher spirit. Your spirituality, and write it down, and then burn it. Say, you take it. You take it. It's that simple. Thank you.
Jerry did not know his name had gotten put in the hat, so he was quite surprised. Scott B., please.
My name is Scott. I'm an alcoholic drug addict. My sobriety date is October 22nd, 1985. What got me into this program was, just like everybody else in here, the abuse of drugs, of alcohol, what it's done to my life, what I've done to everybody else's life that was around me, and my inability to control it. Well, at a young age, I got into it real hard, grew up in an alcoholic family, and ended up joining the military, went in the reserves. Thinking, okay, going to the reserves. Getting more trouble, geographically cure, more trouble. Hey, let me go on the active duty. I heard Germany has really good alcohol over there. I want to go to Germany. So, needless to say, they took me from reserve status to active duty. And that was early 1985. And when I got to Germany, oh yeah, the alcohol was a lot better than what I was finding here in the States. And a lot stronger. And that's what I liked, because when I drank, I didn't drink for flavor. I didn't drink to be social. I drank for effect. I wanted to get as drunk as I could, as quick as I could, and that's the way I drank. Well, needless to say, my command didn't really look too fond on that. One afternoon, I think it was a Saturday, I'm not sure, I know it was a weekend, over in Mutual of Germany, I decided to take my roommate's car that he was in back in the States on emergency leave with some friends out across from the NCO club. Six pack later, a double bock, donuts in the grass. Here comes the MPs. All right, who's driving the car? We don't know. Keys were in my pocket, so it was like, all right, you're going up there to jail. They came and got me, brought me back, confined me to barracks. Okay. Leader 151 later, sneak back out, go over to the NCO club, proceed to drink. Everything from there is hearsay. I drank, I was a blackout drinker. And I thought that was fine. Because I thought that if I could not remember what I did when I was drinking, I was not responsible. Yeah, and that's what I thought. So that got me into trouble, a lot of trouble. And they offered me rehab. I don't know why they did, but they did. They offered me rehab. Sent me to Landstuhl, Germany. And proceeded to go through 45 days. It's called Track 3, U.S. Army. I had known about Alcoholics Anonymous before that. Because my dad was told that he needed to go to AA by the courts. So he would go occasionally. And I thought it was just so that they taught him how to drink. That's all I knew about AA until then. So here I am, 21 years old, in rehab, thinking I'm too young to be an alcoholic. Even though my track record was very well established. And there's this, they got these meetings, they bring in the AA meetings to the rehab. And here comes this young girl, you can tell she's a teenager, all right? Like 16, 17 years old, comes in, brings a meeting in. She had 1 year sober. Being too young, that got thrown right out the window real quick. I did go back out one time afterwards. I celebrated my 22nd birthday in Brenham, Germany. Sitting in a medical unit with an IV full of rum down on a tube. The Hemels clipping the tube off. So you just open that up, fill your cup, clip it back off. And that was my last drunk. And I realized when I got up the next morning that I needed to be in back where I was stationed and back down where my sponsor got back down there and proceeded to work the program and work with them from that point on. Now, they told me not to do certain things. Of course I did them. You know, why are you telling me not to do it? Don't get in a relationship first year. Okay, I don't know how many couple months I think I waited. That relationship, gratefully, neither of us got drunk over it. That relationship lasted a while, but that was a 13th step. For some reason, her husband didn't like me. You tell me to do something, not to do something, and that's my philosophy. Being a young kid, young sober, I would do it. Now, living in sobriety, I have been sober since, and I have lived through a lot in sobriety. I had a first marriage, two kids through that marriage. Marriage did not last. Ended up being in the service, got transferred around. So I've been to meetings all over the place. Germany, I've been in the States, I mean all over the place. We even had, when I was over there in the Gulf War, we even had in the mess tent up the corner, because there was a couple of us in the program, And whenever we got a chance, we would go and have a meeting in the corner. Okay? Now, you've never been to an AA meeting until you're sitting in an AA meeting and the air raid sirens go off and you have to put on Mach 4 gear, and then you continue on with the meeting in full gas mask and suit. Okay? That's the length that I went to stay sober. I needed that, you know. And I've gone through, like I said, a lot in the program being sober. And because of this program and people in this program, I've maybe been able to get through it all, you know. Second marriage, she's still going strong. She's a saint. She puts up with me. I've had two knee replacements. And if anybody's had a knee replacement, you know what I'm talking about some severe pain. But I managed to get through these things. You know, motorcycle accidents, had a couple of them. Managed to get through them too, without picking up a drink, without picking up an illegal drug. Because I reach out when something is going on in my life and I need something and need help. I'm not afraid to call somebody. And I've had people that would call me, knowing I just got out of surgery or something, and they would call me to come down and, you know, see how I was doing, or just checking on me. You know, that's what we do for each other. We check on each other to keep each other sober today. You know, I can't do it by myself. I need everybody here, you know. And in turn, I will do what I can do to help anybody, you know, regardless of that. And I probably rambled on long enough.
I think 6 minutes.
You got 6 minutes? Give it on to the next person. I'm not a big speaker.
So it appears I'm the next speaker. Because we had it planned that anything under 15 minutes, I was it. So I'm Nancy, and I am an alcoholic. And I was so touched with one thing Scott said. He talked about Brennan, Germany. And I sponsored a lady that came from Brennan, Germany. What are the chances of that? And the neat part is she stayed sober a day at a time the rest of her life. So it does work. So my story is I was able to get sober when I was 21, as I mentioned. But what I didn't say was that what led me there. I knew I was powerless when I got to AA meetings, but I really didn't think my life was unmanageable. And thank God for the women in AA and for sponsorship. I'd have never made it without those two things. So many elements. But I realized that I drank... You know what? I drank when I absolutely was not going to. I drank more than I intended to, and I absolutely did things I would not do sober. And just for the record, have not done since sobriety. And those three things taught me about powerlessness. I learned that when I put alcohol in my system, it made the decisions, not me. I might plan to have a beer and be able to do it. I still could, even when I stopped. But I never knew which day it was. I might plan to have one and have one, or I might get absolutely loaded and, you know, compromise my values and the whole deal. And I just didn't know. Alcohol chose, I did not. And so that helped me to learn about the powerlessness and the unmanageability. It was funny, I was doing pen to paper step work with my sponsor, as she suggested, and she was teaching me about these elements of powerlessness and unmanageability. And I was talking with her about my story, and the short version is that my unmanageability of my life at the end of my drinking was screamingly obvious. And I swear to everybody in this room, I absolutely could not see it. Yeah, a few problems. I mean, now and again, this would happen or that would happen. but when you put it all together, it was like, oh my God, it was so obvious. And I really couldn't see it. And that's when it dawned on me what I was dealing with. It's like, this is more than just a little thing, you know? And then I also knew from education I had that it was progressive. And I thought, my God, if these things are happening now, what's it going to be like down the road? And I had an alcoholic parent, and I could see what it was. It's like, I am my mother's daughter. This is who I am. This is progression. I'm just in the baby stages. Now, I have to tell you, when I go back and I read what I wrote down for my alcohol history, I was not in baby stages, but I really thought I was. So I don't want to know what I would look like today with the progression that has happened. So I went to meetings on a regular basis. I became teachable in that I did what you told me to do sometimes. Usually works out pretty good when I do what you suggest. And I almost always do, if people say to me, this is what I did, then I will follow that. I don't do so well when you need to do this. And in the beginning, people needed to tell me, you need to do this, because I simply didn't know. You need to go to meetings. Here's a big book, you need to read it, that sort of thing. So they did have to teach me in that way. But I know that the people that were teaching me that had done it themselves, they'd walked this road, just like everybody in this room. And I know that in this room, one of the great delights, as I was sitting up here, one of the biggest joys for me today has been knowing that in this room, there is somebody here with nearly 59 years of sobriety and somebody in the room with 1 or 2 days. I know that as a fact. It just, you don't get that elsewhere. And we all understand that. And so I love that we share our experience, strength, and hope. And we share in meetings what we do to stay sober and to recover so that somebody can go, so that the newcomer can go home and do what we did. They can go home and read page 416. Telling you I'm happy, joyous, and free is lovely, but how in the hell did you get there? They can go home and read those pages. I can give them, we can introduce them to people and they can get the phone numbers and they can call them. I love it when I hear that at meetings. I really do, because that was what was so helpful to me. So I try to pass on what was given to me so freely. It just blows me away how free we are with each other. Just a day at a time. You know, this is Saturday. This is the only day I have to stay sober. A couple of roundup stories for me in my experience is that I had come to roundup when I had 8 days sobriety. And as a 21-year-old, there is no way I mean, it sealed the deal for me. It's like, oh my God, these people are having fun. I'm not going to die in 30 minutes because I can't drink. You know, I really, 21, give it up. My life's over, no doubt. Why do I want to do this? And I came to roundup and people were laughing and sharing and dancing. And, you know, in our room last night during one of the meetings, it's like, oh my God, the laughter and the hooting and the hollering. It was awesome. It's like there is life after sobriety. And so from there, I've been to nearly all the roundups. That particular roundup was over in Farmington, and then we grew, and so we came to a larger venue. And the other special roundup for me was during an Alcathon meeting. I was in the Alcathon meeting, and it just happened that there was a gentleman there. He was unable. He was here sharing at the Alcathon meeting, and he was unable to stay sober. He couldn't. He had had 20 years of sobriety, gone back to drinking, and he couldn't get sober. And he was at an Alcathon meeting trying to stay sober, but he wasn't. And the miracle of that is it was my 20th anniversary that day. You know, I do not have your conventional definition of a higher power, God or Jesus. No, that just doesn't work for me. My definition is a force for good that works through people and all things. And that gentleman at that meeting was my force for good that day. You just never know when you're speaking who's listening. And so I always try to remember to think about the positives, to be grateful, and to pass those forward. Now, I need you to be very clear that I have the other side of me that really is pretty predominant. I have to fight at that negativity a lot. But that's where I go to my sponsor. I share with my sponsor the intimate things, and I share in meetings what I do for recovery, because that's what I got from the people in AA that were staying sober a long time. This meeting, in what has been shared today, is just nothing short of miraculous. We are so honored to hear the four people that shared today, because I'll never get to hear their stories like that again. Because they're not pre-recorded messages, you know? So we get to take home that little bit that Rosalie shared and that little bit that Scott shared. You know, and that's exactly how it works. And the rest of it, I'm going to forget in 30 minutes. I don't know about you guys, but I'm going to. I know that for sure. So for today, this particular Saturday, I think I'll stay sober. I think that'd be a good deal.
Yeah.
I would like to thank everybody for being here and being so gracious and generous in your sobriety and time, because almost everybody in this, on the mountain, but even in this meeting, made time to be here today to celebrate sobriety. It doesn't happen. I'm sorry, but I'm way too busy to come up here. I got too much to do. And we carve out time, and we make the time to celebrate. And that's what sobriety is about. We are not a glum lot. We are here to celebrate sobriety and to be happy, joyous, and free. And just for today, I think we can all do that. So with that, I think what I would like to do again, to give a round of applause, please, to our speakers. And I would like us all to end with the, and I have to read it because I'm nervous. And I know these things, but you know how that goes. All right, so we are going to end with our unity declaration, if you would please. This we owe to AA's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united. For on AA's unity depends our lives, and the lives of those to come. Have an awesome, awesome afternoon.